The time has come, ladies and gentlemen.
InvestFest, that's right.
That's right. InvestFest 2023 is here.
August 25th, 26th, and 27th in Atlanta, Georgia. We are taking it to a new level. Bigger than ever. This year, we're going to do 20,000 people in Atlanta, Georgia.
I want you to do yourself a favor. Head over to investfest.com right now.
We will have activations from Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. 3 days, musical performances, billionaires. Everything is going to be a completely life-changing experience. Vendor Marketplace, Food Truck Village, you know how we do.
Don't wait, don't hesitate, head over now.
Earners, what's up? Look, I want to give y'all a little peek behind the curtain of producing Earn Your Leisure. It's a lot more than just sitting down and chatting. It involves meticulous planning, recording, editing, and then promoting each episode to ensure it reaches all of you. And if you picked up any of our merch, then you know there's a whole extra layer of logistics from inventory management to shipping. Running a podcast is like running a small business. And speaking of business, I know many of you entrepreneurs are involved in e-commerce. You understand how crucial it is to streamline operations and cut costs wherever possible. That's why I want to talk to you about ShipStation, the multi-carrier shipping solution that integrates seamlessly with all your online sales channels. It's all about optimizing your shipping, connecting with expert partners, and freeing up more of your time to focus on scaling your business. Now let's talk about our experience with ShipStation. This tool has been a game changer for us, especially with automating routine tasks. Being able to manage everything from one dashboard and print shipping labels with just a click, absolute lifesavers. Plus, the discounts we get on shipping costs are incredible. Honestly, it feels like we're saving thousands. And as our show and merch sales have grown, ShipStation's robust automation and reporting features have helped us keep up without missing a beat. For those of you who get overwhelmed by order volumes, ShipStation's easy-to-use dashboard is a dream come true. You can import orders from any sales channel, apply shipping preferences automatically, and handle customer service issues right there. Not to mention the savings with up to 89% off carrier rates like UPS, DHL Express, and USPS. It's no wonder over 130,000 companies stick with ShipStation long term. So, are you ready to turn your shipping challenges into growth opportunities? Head over to ShipStation.com and use promo code EARN for a free 60-day trial. Again, that's ShipStation.com, promo code EARN. Start streamlining your shipping and scaling your business today. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Earners, what's up? Look, today I want to talk to you about something that's been on my mind, a real weight on my shoulders. You know, we all have these moments, big or small, that just stick with us. When we don't talk about these things, then they can start to affect our lives in unexpected ways. That's why having a space to express these feelings is so important. I know firsthand the benefits of therapy. It's been transformative for my friends and family. Therapy can help you learn crucial skills like setting boundaries and developing coping strategies. It's not just about dealing with major events. It's also about enhancing your day-to-day life, allowing you to become the best version of yourself. So if you've been thinking about therapy, BetterHelp can be a great option for you. It's entirely online, which makes it super convenient and adaptable to your busy schedule. You start by filling out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. And you can even switch therapists at any time if you feel the need without any additional cost. So get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/earnyourleisure today to get 10% off your first month. Remember, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/earnyourleisure. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. Head over there now.
All right, guys. Welcome back, EYL. This is a very unique situation. I will explain later. Yeah. But we are here with the podcast king, David Shams.
Crown. He put his crown on, y'all.
Social Proof Empire got the new studio. Mm-hmm. In Atlanta. Thank you for having us up there. You got your real estate place that you've been working on. You got the big event that you got coming up. You got an online community. You've taught a variety of different people how to actually get going in the podcast space, how to monetize the space.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just...
Oh, wait, before, he's still the first person that's ever done this, right? Nobody's ever done this.
Well, we're going to explain this, but...
No, I'm not saying this. I'm talking about what he's done already with us. So you're the first person that we interviewed, and then you interviewed us.
Yeah,
right after. That's never happened.
For sure, for
like
sure.
ever. That's never happened. So there's never been an episode.
It's happened before.
Where?
Envy did it multiple times.
No, the same day.
The same day.
Huh? Yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah, because I came to the kitchen table.
Yeah.
And y'all interviewed me.
Yeah.
And I think we like switched seats or something.
Yeah, we did musical chairs.
And they interviewed y'all. But I have to say this up front, man. You all are, one was the motivation. Like I think I started podcasting before you guys,
yep.
But I remember we was at the Cheesecake Factory and I was having a conversation with Troy and he's like, man, I like your stuff, man. You're just not, you don't do it every week. It's not consistent. And I really took that to heart.
I heard.
Bro, that next Monday on the morning meetup, I'm like, y'all, I'm about to be consistent with this thing. I love doing it. If I ever not drop an episode on Monday, I will come on this call and give away like $2,000.
Wow.
That was, I was offended because you didn't say it in an offensive way, but I was offended.
But then also, let's talk about that moment for a moment, because I saw you did reference that online.
Yeah.
But what you didn't reference was that he did give you education after that.
Yeah. So that
100%.
It was just inconsistent. It was when I saw the clip, I'm like, damn, all right, cool. But what it was like, I had used you as a reference before, mm-hmm. right? So I think we were interviewing Alex at the time, mm-hmm. and I was trying to find information about him, and it was your interview. I'm like, yo, this guy's great. And so when I saw you, I'm like, yo, you know, like you're really great at this. Mm-hmm. But the only thing is that you don't do it enough.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of like you dropping it, and it was like, it wasn't even a challenge. It was like, yo, this is just like positive critique. And then we had a longer conversation because we went back to Jeremy Anderson's house, and I was like,
well, let me tell you, in that moment.
Yeah, in that moment, it sort of felt like.
I don't even remember anything you said after this. Like, keep it.
I didn't eat my food. Mind.
I'm in a space with some people that do the same thing, and they're recognizing my inconsistency. And I took it personally. I needed it, of course. Not that you said anything bad. I was like, okay, I got to be consistent. Then later on, this is more flowers. We're going to do a bouquet here.
Here we go.
I really started educating me on the podcasting space and joined the Ernie Leisure Network. And like just being able to have proximity, I never, ever want to take that for granted. Like, you guys are... like literally paving a way and have given me so much game, so much information. And I can honestly say I wouldn't know half the stuff that I know right now, even to teach other people, if it wasn't for you all. Half of it, you all directly saying, this is what you need to do. Mm. The other half is watching and modeling. So it's been an incredible, incredible journey, even knowing y'all. So
appreciate that.
Yeah, for sure.
Appreciate that for sure. And it's been great to see your growth as well.
Yeah.
You know, and consistency, I think another person that wasn't the most consistent, it was 19 Keys. He had a show. People forget, like, mm-hmm. high-level conversations took over the world and, you know, gets 10 million views every episode he puts out. But people don't forget that he had a show before High Level Conversation. And that was one of the main issues, was the level of consistency. So
here's the crazy part. The same conversation I had with you, I had with him.
Really?
Same thing. And he was like, all right, let's just do this then.
Right.
Let's just do this then. And like, obviously what the success has had now is just incredible. But it was like, you just see that like the talent is there.
Yeah.
The message is there. The pack, everything was there. It was like, this is that one piece. How are we going to do it? And everybody can see what it turned out to be now.
How many millionaires can come from the UIL tree?
That's an interesting quote. I thought about that quote.
Yeah.
Yeah, because most people, how do we quantify it? Like, some people can look at the artists that they've signed and how, you know, their careers have gone, but how do you know the everyday person that got information and now has become a millionaire?
For sure. I think y'all hit it from three sides too. One is the common listener, right? Multiple sides. One is the common listener, the information that you guys put out, right? They could take that information and you can't quantify how many people made millions from that, right? The second part is the people that have been on the show,
mm-hmm.
being able to share with the audience that became millionaires from their notoriety, from like you guys giving them the platform. I think three is your circle of, and I would be one, mentees, right? People that have you've taught the game.
Mm.
Maybe they're not, they weren't on the show, or maybe they're not like the listener, but people that you've taught the game to. And I think four, your whole team of people that your collaborations, partnerships, right? So it's going to be very difficult to quantify the success. You know what I mean? Like even on like, let's say like Bad Boy, you could say, okay, well, 112 became successful, Mary J, all these people, but the impact is different from what y'all are doing. So I figure it's proper to spend a few minutes.
Appreciate that.
Y'all don't get the credit, man. Nobody, and I was saying it, Complex list, it's so faulty because you can't, I know your argument is like, well, it's for hip hop, but who's more hip hop? Like, who's interviewed more celebrities from the hip hop culture and figured out how they became a celebrity than y'all? They go on radio runs on their album that's coming out, their movie that's coming out, but nobody's understanding the backing on how they became that, right? So y'all not be on the list is disrespectful. Nobody on that list has made a person a dime. Nobody on that list has put 14,000 people in a stadium. Just y'all. What are we talking about right now?
Can't argue with you. Can't argue with you, man.
You got a point there, Dave.
You got a point. You're right.
Appreciate that, man.
I appreciate that, man, for sure. For sure. But, you know, people normalize greatness. And I think 19 Keys has spoken about that before. But it's like sometimes when you see things, it's hard to have an appreciation for it because it just becomes normal, right? Like when you accomplish amazing things on a consistent basis, that's the problem with consistency, is that it desensitizes us, right? Like if a player just drops 40 points and you never heard of him ever in his life, it's like, yo, that's crazy. If LeBron dropped 40 points, it's just a regular day, right? You know what I'm saying? So it's like we've normalized greatness, and I think that that's something that is difficult because it's like, yeah, to be able to accomplish a variety of different things, whether it's going sell out two shows in Toronto and Royal Albert Hall in London and 14,000 people at Invest Fest and a variety of different things that we've been able to accomplish. Even if you look at EYO Network, I mean, it really, if you look at it from an independent standpoint, like we have more shows on the charts than on CNBC or any like major, like, you know, when you look at Market Mondays, Earn Your Leisure, High Level Conversations, just those three.
Yeah.
You'd be hard pressed to find any podcast network, anybody across any genre that has three shows that are that successful.
Yeah. Or even just three shows, right? Because a lot of them just don't have the network. They don't even have any shows.
But I'm just saying there are podcast networks, but I don't know any podcast network that has that kind of roster.
Yeah.
So, but you know, it is what it is, you know? You just keep the ball rolling and keep going.
Yeah, but the greatness isn't even normalized yet because you guys are doing amazing things and it's just not enough people talking about it. You know what I mean? When LeBron goes out and drops 40, it becomes normal, but you're like, yo, we know that this person is great, but y'all are dropping 40 every week and nobody's saying anything. Like,
I mean, it's based on what we're doing, right? Like, no, they're not expecting this. This is built around business. It's built around entrepreneurship. It's built around finance and investing. It's not built around athletics. It's not built around specifically music. And so it's tough because it's not common nature in our community, right? These conversations don't happen. So it's still like almost like a foreign language that's penetrating the mainstream. But the more that people do talk about it, and we had that conversation about showing up in these places where all these people are that are doing those things, it becomes like, wait, these guys are here again? They're here again? They're here again? What's happening right now, right? And so we're just trying to penetrate the masses with the message. And again, eventually it'll be commonplace, and that's the goal.
Yeah. I want to know, when did you know you were making an impact, though? I mean, you know you're doing it online, but at some point you said, well, we want to put all these people in one room. When did you know, okay, it's time to just come out of the living room and really let's bring people together?
I think it was our first networking event in LA. Mm-hmm. Like after like episode 14, we was in LA, decided to do a last minute networking event, and really last minute, like decided to do it on Friday and it was on a Monday.
Really?
Yeah. And it was in Carson, California, which is like out the way.
Hold on. What made you think this was going to be successful?
Well, honestly, that inspiration came from Matt. Matt was doing a network. He did a networking event in Atlanta. Randomly, you know, I saw it on Instagram. I'm like, oh, that's dope. Like, you're doing a networking event. We should do one. We in LA. Like, so it's like, just put it together and put it on Instagram. A restaurant owner reached out to us and let us use his spot. Mm-hmm. it was all like within 48 hours of putting it together. Put a flyer up on Instagram, created an Eventbrite, and people came. So it was like, you know, probably like 150 people that came.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And people came from like San Diego, IE. Like they was coming from like two hours away. And it was on a Monday at like 5 o'clock, like terrible traffic in LA. And that was like, you know, impactful because the love was just there. Like, you know, I mean, you had all different type of people from different walks of life. That was the first event that we did where people actually met us in person and was like, you know, championing us and like, you know, I rock with y'all. I had did Matt event before that. Matt had a real estate event. And this is where we met a lot of different people like Sabine and Miss Business and stuff like that. But that was like the first time since the show had started. That was like around episode 6. Mm-hmm. And there was people rocking with it from then. So when I did that, people was coming up to me like, yo, I rock with your show. I love your show. Da, da, da. And that was like episode 6. So a few weeks later, we did our own event. And that was the first time where we got to connect with people in person. And, you know, once you see that happen, mm-hmm. it's like, all right, we on to something.
Yeah, it's interesting because it was like, let's maximize the time. We were initially going out to L.A. because we had just confirmed Al Harrington. And this was a big deal. It was like, yo, we got Al Harrington. You know, we grew up watching him play. Shotty had a relationship with him or met him early in his basketball career. So it was like, oh, this is going to be great. We can talk about cannabis. And the illest thing was like, all right, well, if we're going to be out there, let's maximize the time. Let's do that. Let's put a networking event together. Let's see if people show up. And I remember being at the networking event, and at the time I'm still teaching. I'm like, yo, I got to catch this plane. I can't stay the whole time, right? Like, I'm still like, yo, this is great with meeting people, but I can't stay. So I think I left like an hour early to get back on the plane to come to New York. I was like, this is crazy. So that was a moment. But I think after that, it was like, yo, we got something. But then when we did it in New York, yeah. we did one in Brooklyn at BK9. And when we pulled up, it was packed. Yeah. Like the restaurant was packed. We were walking up. I had Ab with me and Zay, Mike's niece. We were doing our summer program. So, yo, come with me to this event. And we're walking up and they're looking at me like, this is Troy. Yeah. Like, it's Troy. We're just going with him to Brooklyn. And we're walking up and people are like, yo, I just took the bus from Philly to come see you. Yo, I live in Rhode Island. I came down here just to see y'all. And they're looking at me like, wait, what? I'm like, yo, this is crazy. This is turning into something. And then what we saw inside of that restaurant that night was pockets of information. And so, you know, we had somebody talking about stocks and people were surrounding around them because they wanted to hear the information. Derek Falcon, who had just did episode 11, was talking about, you know, his episode. And we were just watching this happen like, yo, this is it. Like, everybody's just gravitating around the information they want to know. And we packed out the spot in Brooklyn. This is going to be crazy. Like, even in the intro for every episode, the clips from that event are part of it. You know what I mean? Yeah, it was a major thing for us.
What made Earn Your Leisure so special, though? You know what I mean? I'm like episode 6, you're talking about episode 11, episode 14, and people are coming out. And there are a lot of people that maybe they're talented, but it's taking them 60 episodes. My joint ain't start rocking to like 50. What?
I think we had that. So we had a head start. We was doing social media. I was doing social media for 2 years before we had Earn Your Leisure. So we didn't just start with zero. Yeah. There was anticipation for Earn Your Leisure before. That's the whole reason why we started Earn Your Leisure. Mm-hmm. Because the anticipation had been building so much. Everybody was DMing like, where's your show? Where do I watch it? So it was like, all right, the demand was already there.
Yeah.
So it was like, you know, when we opened the gates, we already had thousands of people that was willing to just walk into the house as opposed to just trying to build the house and then like market it like, hey, come over here. So that was definitely a part of it. But also I think the packaging, it was just a good time. But the packaging was different as far as mixing the sports and entertainment and pop culture and blending it with business, you know, kind of adding all of the elements from the slang, fashion, you know, different things that we was doing as far as how we was curating the stories, telling stories related to business. And that was something that was like really just interesting. Social media definitely played a big part because a lot of those clips was going viral early.
Mm-hmm.
Like early, we did a clip about like George Foreman.
That was crazy.
And the George Foreman grill and Hulk Hogan. That went viral. Soulja Boy.
Amazon.
That was like on episode 1.
Yep.
So from the beginning, but like I said, there was clips going viral before that. But once we started, you know, it seemed like everything that we would put out would just go viral on social media. So it was one of those things people see on Explore Play, like, what's this? So they were just tapping in. So fortunately for us, we never really had to try to build the audience, because the audience was already built. Like, that was the hard part, trying to figure it out 2 years prior. Was like, how do you get people to engage with your content? But that was already figured out by the time we already had a 2 year head start. By the time Earn Your Leisure came, it wasn't really trying to figure out how to make a clip or how to put a title on a video or how to make it engaging, because it was already tried and tested for 24 months previously. So by the time Earn Your Leisure came, it was already like a thing where we know, like, all right, this is what's going to hit. This is going to explode. And that's exactly what happened.
Do y'all think it had anything to do with timing?
Everything. Of course. Time is everything.
Of course. Yeah. A lot of it has to do with timing. I always credit, you know, Dame's 2015 Breakfast Club interview and how that impacted me and how it felt when he was talking about being an entrepreneur and talking about legacy and talking about that generational but sustainable wealth. It was like, man, here I am in this 7 to 3.
Was that the first back and forth conversation that the world had around entrepreneurship versus job?
Our culture,
for us,
it was the most impactful. Yeah. I don't know if it was the first, but it was the most impactful.
It hit home. Like, I'm a teacher and I'm watching this. Yeah. And I'm watching, like, he was an entrepreneur, Mike was an entrepreneur, and I'm the teacher. Yeah. And I'm just like, yo, damn. Like, I remember my pops working for 40 years, but I knew that didn't guarantee me an interview at the place he worked. I'm like, yo, damn, like, this school is not even named after me. What am I giving to the next generation? It's like, this is tough, right? And then Jay came with, in 2017, with the 444 album. And with Hugh, I'm a huge Jay-Z fan. And what he was talking about was legacy. Like, he has a song called Legacy, right? And then he has the story of OJ. And, like, everything around it was surrounded around financial literacy. And it was, like, great. At the time, even prior to that, like, we were writing lessons in a program, but they were based around the lyrics that in hip hop. And so we're teaching through music, but we're teaching financial literacy through it. So it was like, all those things happened at the same time. It was like, perfect melting pot for this to happen.
And I think you guys even started crossing over, like, really the first people to find celebrities, artists, and start finding out the business behind the stuff that they were doing. And I think some people might look at it like, oh man, I missed the boat. Everyone's been interviewed already. Everyone's doing it. But you guys keep finding the perfect timing, like the perfect timing for exposing entrepreneurship from a celebrity standpoint, bringing people together, right? Like, you guys keep finding the right time.
But I think even before it's a celebrity, it's your next door neighbor.
Yeah.
Right. Your next door neighbor could be the millionaire, and you'd have no idea if they never got to tell their story. We interviewed Derek Ferguson, who's a close friend. He was a CFO of Bad Boy for 20 years. I went to church with this guy for 10 years. Mm-hmm. When we did his interview, he's like, this is the first time somebody's actually asked me what I did for a living. Wow. He's been in this space for 20 years, right? He's seen from Bad Boy to Ciroc, like, he's seen all these things, Revolt. He's been there. Nobody's ever asked him. And I was like, wait, nobody's ever asked him? You got so much information. Because the chances of somebody being you are highly likely. The chances of somebody being Puff is going to be tough.
Yeah.
Right? And so it was like, the real estate attorney or the real estate agent, the tax professional, right? All these people are entrepreneurs and creating businesses that you actually need, that you should know about, because there's a great chance that you could actually do that and apply it into your everyday life. Then it was like, all right, once we built up that clientele, it was like, well, who's next, right? Can we get the celebrity, right? We always talk about this, network across. Right? Because if you network across long enough, like, that person might introduce you to the next person you're looking for, right? So you start at this level and then you build up and build up. And then when you get the celebrity, it's like, all right, well, let's peel back the layers. Because like you said, most people go on interviews because they have something to promote. But most times nobody asks them anything about the business, right? Everybody's getting paid for their profession or they're making money from it. But how are you doing it? Because that's the important part. Like, we see people doing it, they never told us how. And maybe because they didn't know or they just didn't feel confident enough to talk about it. But that's what this was. Like, it felt like, all right, let's humanize this as much as we can. Let's see how much information they're willing to share, because number one, it can help from the lessons that they learn, or number two, it can inspire somebody to do something different.
For sure. I think you guys are creating the right timing. It's like when y'all do something and then everybody starts doing it and they say, well, it was the right timing. No,
he loves
I it. Created this.
Yeah. That's shoddy line. Like, yo, they start copying, reinvest something new.
Yeah. For the first InvestFest, 4,000 people. it has to be kind of nerve-wracking because this is one of the few things that you can't hide the success or failure, right? So if I drop a book, nobody knows how many I sold. You know what I mean? Like, if I drop a podcast, really nobody knows how many downloads I got, right? But a live event is the one thing you cannot hide. If there's no one there, I mean, you got to put people to the front so the camera looks good. Yeah. But 4,000 people, which is absolutely incredible, years ago, where did this thought come from? And that was a lot.
So, definitely got to give a big shout out to him for 100. Mm-hmm. Went to his event in Miami, and that was the first time that we saw something like that, like the level of production, and especially for our culture, but probably just in general, because I know for me personally, I didn't go to any like business conferences like that. So we were inspired by that. Like, yo, we got to do something. Like, but
how many people were at that event?
I think it was like 2,000, something like
2,000.
Yeah. You know, it was just for his community, Recession Proof. Me, I'm very big on taking inspiration, but not copying.
Yeah.
It's two different things. Like, you know what I mean? We all get inspired for everything. I might be like, oh, that's a dope hoodie. Like, I want to rework it. I don't want to take your hoodie and, you know, just put our logo on it. Right. That's copying. But being inspired by something is different. So I've been inspired by everything from art, music, everything. So we were inspired, but we didn't want to copy. So it was like, all right, well, how do we make it different? How do we do an event? Like, we need to do an event. We got a lot of momentum. A lot of people like us. Like, we want to do an event bigger because we did our first event at Yes Spot, actually. Mm-hmm. So we were doing events, then the pandemic shut it down. So it was like, this would be the first event after the pandemic, but we want to rebrand it. We don't want to do like the same thing that we did before the pandemic, which before the pandemic, the formula was a 2-day event, and it would be the first day, like a Saturday, it would be a live podcast. Mm-hmm. And then on Sunday, it was an education seminar. Right. And that's what we did. We did it in D.C. We did it in Atlanta. And then we were about to do it in Philly. And then we had COVID came and shut it down.
Mm.
So it's like, all right, we got to do something. We got to look to scale. So understand words is very important. So festival, the idea of festival, like we need to have a festival. And, you know, past festival, a lot of times people look at festival like, it has to be outside. Mm-hmm. But I looked up the dictionary's word, and it never says in the dictionary a festival has to be outside.
What are the characteristics?
I could look at it and see. I'm not 100% sure, but it doesn't say outside.
Right.
I think that's just kind of been associated mm-hmm. because a lot of festivals are outside. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's just been associated with it, right? Mm-hmm. So, but it didn't have to be called a festival. It didn't have to be outside to be a festival.
Right.
So just thinking about it, it was like, all right, well, it's difficult to do what we do outside
yeah.
for a variety of different reasons. If you take the elements of it might rain and stuff like that, but just to get people's attention, like you got to actually be able to sit down and learn for hours at a time, mm-hmm. right? And standing outside doesn't really lend itself to that. Mm-hmm. It's good for music when you're just halfway listening, halfway drunk. Like, you know, that's not the most right. important thing. But it's like when you actually have to pay attention to something, yeah. it's better in a closed setting.
Yeah.
So it's like that's kind of a hurdle. But what would also add to a festival feel? Mm-hmm. So when you start thinking about festivals, it's like what are in festivals? So food trucks, yeah. right? Like that's part of a festival feel. So it's like, all right, well, what if we can add food trucks to it and have like a culinary experience?
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, all right, Vend the Essence, once again, drawing inspiration. And so what they did with their vendor marketplace right. and like Essence Fest, that's one of the biggest festivals for our culture. So it was like, all right, well, at that time, nobody was doing vendor marketplaces for their events. And other people had like a vendor marketplace, but it was just like their booths.
Yeah.
Promoting their products, which is fine, but nobody had done it where it was like outside businesses could set up shop.
Yeah.
So it was like, oh, this is an opportunity to do that. So now you got two things. You got the vendor space, which is that's a festival type of feel. Mm-hmm. You got food trucks, that's a festival type of feel. And then the stuff that we were already currently doing with the live podcast, the panel discussions and stuff like that. We were already familiar with that. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, all right, well, entertainment is always a big part of it. So now if we can add an entertainment factor to it, so that's where the musicians come in. So now it's like, now we have a headliner performer, or we have, you know, for VIP night, we have a performer for that, right? So now you add the music part of it, which every festival pretty much has some level of music entertainment part of it. So, and then it was like, what do we call it? And then, you know, going back and forth with names for a long time, and then Invest Fest. Feel like that, you really can't come up with a better name than that, right? Like Invest Fest. It's short, simple, conveys the message.
Yeah.
Very easy to put on a shirt and for people to remember. It rhymes.
Yeah.
Invest Fest.
It's a bar.
It rhymes.
And that's and that's how it was done. That's kind of how it came to fruition.
Yeah. And it was never a thing of being feared. Right, like we never operate in fear. We operate in like, all right, let's see what we can do next. And so, like, even the title of the name, it was about it not being about us, right? So that alleviates any type of fear, because it really wasn't about us. You think about it, we could have named it the Ernie Leisure Fest, but we didn't. Sure. It was really about the people. Even like from the marketplace standpoint, it was like, yeah, some people have promoted themselves, but it was like, you know, let's let the community be part of it. Because even our episodes, right, we could have just stayed it just being me and Shadi doing episodes.
Yeah.
It was like, nah, let's figure out how many people we can highlight their greatness. Mm-hmm. And so all the episodes become like monumental because it was highlighting greatness, right? Even from a standpoint, it was like, all right, well, if it's not about us, we know what we're going to do. We do this every day. We can, you know, we're going to find somebody to interview, but it was like, we have a network.
Yeah.
Let's highlight them, right? So if Dave Shan's on network, let's have him have a panel. If MG's on, you know what I'm saying? So it was like highlighting everything that was going on outside of just the people that they see and associate with the brand. It was like, no, this is a brand. This is its own IP, and this is about the people. So the marketplace becomes that. The food trucks become that. The community that comes inside of it becomes that. Because it's more than just a festival where people are going to come and gather and listen to people. It's like, nah, this could be your next business partner you're sitting next to.
For sure.
Right? You could find somebody here, your next person to invest in your business. Whereas we didn't see that. We were inspired by other people, but it was like, all right, this would be we can improve on what this is because it's missing that. You know what I mean?
But that's the most, I think the most important thing is the name.
Is it?
In my opinion. Because like I said, just that, it breaks the mold of what, there's a lot of conferences.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of symposiums, conferences, different things of that nature. No, to my knowledge, nobody has ever named something that is business related a festival. So doing that already send shockwaves through the system.
You think so? I mean, yo, I was actually on a panel, and I was making the point like that the show or the product makes the name. The name, like people want to think of a perfect name, but none of us would have thought, yo, we're gonna have all these products in one place, and we're gonna call it Walmart.
Well, I think they go hand in hand. So the name is extremely important because that's the first thing people see. Mm-hmm. That's what gets them in the door. But it's like if you walk in a house with no furniture, nothing, you're gonna walk right out, right?
Yeah, true.
So it got it. Now once the house is fully decorated and it's crazy art deco and art and all that, now you're interested in staying.
Yeah, it's like when you hear Rolling Loud before you knew what it was, mm-hmm. you knew with the name. Yeah. Right, like Coachella, we didn't know exactly what's happening, but you knew the name. Even like with Jay, what he did with Made in America, it was like, what's he doing with that? What is this going to be?
True.
Right.
So I'm saying, like, I didn't know what Earn Your Leisure meant for like a year. And I'm talking about, I already knew you guys from that long. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't know. Is it you come up with a name where people get it, or is the mystique?
I think for InvestFest, like I said, and this is why, like, I was really adamant. In festival, I thought was very important because the word festival, now you got to live up to create a festival.
Right.
You just can't name it a festival and have it in your backyard. Like, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, now that forces you to think outside the box and to be original and to add different elements to it opposed to just having a seminar.
Yeah. And it's not going to feel the same, right? If you named it a conference, you've probably been to a bunch of those.
Yeah.
Right? When you hear festival, it's like, they're doing something different. Automatically, they're doing something different.
Mm, I need to change the name of my summit. We're not doing conferences and summits. We're going to change the whole name. Like, I got a trademark too. Thanks, Sean. Yeah, let me ask you this. 4,000 people first time, right?
Yeah.
First one. Did you know you were going to have 4,000 people before you did it? Or it just so happened y'all had 4,000? Like, what was the number when you, nah, when you start that, coming
so
together?
So when you do these type of events, especially like what we do with that, like you have to have seating for a certain amount of people. So it's like seating chart. So it's like, all right, you know, you're seating for 3,500, 4,000, whatever that is. And then you can, as you get closer, you're trying to see, maybe we need to take some seats away because we're not going to hit this number. Or we can add, but it's kind of difficult to change that. So you kind of go into it with a set target,
right?
Of like what you want to hit, and try to accomplish that goal. So that was a target around. I don't know the exact number that we targeted, but it wasn't just a random thing. Like because it's like you might if you set the room for 1,000 people and then you tell them we got 4,000, it can't happen. Mm-hmm. Like it has to be set for the expectations that you're giving them. Like, you got to give the venue expectations. Like, this is how many people we got to have. Because then they got to send the plans to the fire marshal.
Yeah.
They got to you know, bring the walls in and put the chairs in. And it's a variety of things.
How do you gauge that?
But you got, and remember, like,
where are we getting the number from to even look for a venue that holds this amount of people?
So it's the analytics, right? It's the reason why when we look at it, it's like, we could do it in New York. That's our biggest audience. But right now, it's during COVID. So at the time, we couldn't do anything in New York. Mm-hmm. So it was like, well, where's the next biggest audience that we have? Oh, Atlanta. Okay, bet. So now we look at it that. And then there's certain like restrictions that we couldn't do because it was COVID at the time. But it was like, all right, well, we saw what an event looked like when we went to Miami with him for 100. Shout out to him again. Like, all right, well, if they can do that, and I feel like our audience has grown to a point, I think we could maybe, let's try to double that. So you got a baseline based on your analytics, plus your reach, plus what you know can be done. It's like you've seen in the past, like, all right, this feels like a number that I think is obtainable for us to do.
But also, it's the eye test, but it's also testing the waters. So even when we was doing free networking events, like, that kind of gives us an idea. So like the London is a perfect example, InvestFest Europe. So we did InvestFest Europe in London last year at Royal Albert Hall. So Royal Albert Hall is one of the most prestigious venues in the world, and it holds 4,500 people. So you don't just guess. Like, you don't want to just, no, I'm being honest, because people might be listening. They might be like, it's like, oh, I'm booking Madison Square Garden. And then it's like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you don't want to just book Crypto Arena, and then it's like 100 people. So there's a science to it, but it's not a set science. Mm-hmm. So it's a feeling that you have. It is an eye test feeling, but I think you also have to do other events to work your way up to that. So before we did the Royal Albert Hall, we did a free event in London, free networking event, and 2,500 people came to a venue that held 300, and it was 2,000 people on the street. So that gave us a feeling that there was a high demand in London, and with enough time and enough marketing, we felt confident that we could fill up Royal Albert Hall. It's never a guarantee.
You don't know.
300 people?
Yeah, it was crazy. But that's, to that point, it was like, Atlanta. Our first event was in Atlanta. How many tickets did we sell? All right, let's look at the analytics for that. Yeah, we did a network event. All right, how many people showed up? You know what I mean? Like, we started to see these things, and it was like, all right, this makes sense. We can get this done here.
So the last event that we did, the Atlanta event that we did at Just Spot, we did like 500 people, right? Mm. And that was, then we took like 18 months because of COVID, took off. And then we came back and we saw like him 400 had almost 2,000 people in his event. So I was like, all right, well, if we did 500 almost 2 years ago, he has 2,000. You know, we kind of know Atlanta's a very good market for us. Mm-hmm. So you start playing around the numbers in your head. Like, you know, it's still, like I said, it's still not a set science because you don't know. Anything is possible.
For sure.
People might not come. You know what I'm saying? It's always a risk when you do an event.
Did we ever have a feeling? Like, did you ever, anybody ever feel? Especially like you lost the tickets.
Yeah, not that they're not going to come, but again, this is 2021, right? So like, even I got COVID. Like, even leading up to it, I was sick. Like, it was a chance that I might not even made it to the first event. You remember that? So it was like, I didn't think that people wouldn't come. I just didn't know if people felt safe enough to come. There was a little of that. You know what I mean? Because it was like, we still didn't know. Like, there was still a high in the season where it was like, I'm not sure. Do I want to risk my health or get this information? Yeah. And so if people had to put that in their mind, it was like, there's some doubt. But, you know, we were looking at it when we were leading up to it. I'm just like, nah, this is happening. Yeah. And then it became like, you know, Shotty was down here a week early. Ad was out here. Mike was already out here. I was like, there's no way I'm missing this. If these people are coming, right. I'm missing this.
All right. So first event, 4,000 people, amazing success. What'd you do wrong? The first one.
I'm not necessarily sure we did anything wrong. It was just a short amount of time. It was like 6 weeks from start to finish as far as, so, you know, it's
6 weeks.
Yeah. So I'm going to map this out, right? So Him 500's event was in April of that year. Mm-hmm. So like you join the inspiration from there, right? And you're like, oh wait, okay. Yeah, we can do this. And I remember we had a conversation. He was like, yo, are we going to do this? And I think it probably was like May. He was like, oh, I'm like, yeah, let's do it.
It was a group chat. I said, I got an idea. That was like in end of May, June. We didn't really formalize the plan.
Till like, until June. Yeah.
And it was
like, yo, guys.
First week of August.
Are we going to do this or not? And it was like, all right, let's do this. What we need to do.
So, but I mean, given the circumstances, I think we did pretty good. So I don't necessarily look at it like what we did wrong. It's just what can you add?
Yeah.
Even this year, like every year, it's like, look to see, okay, what could we add?
Yeah.
What was missing? What could have made it an even better experience?
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I think is a better way to kind of frame it, of like, what's a better experience, a better, you know, user vibe, as opposed to just kind of keeping the same thing going year after year.
So every detail, right? Like you're looking at everything from, again, your analytics, right? Was our ticket pricing incorrect? Was our VIP venue correct? Can we make it better? How can we make it bigger? How do we make the experience for, you know, the person who's coming as grand as possible? How do we make it as impactful as possible?
Hold that thought.
Go ahead.
When you're thinking about, okay, one is, okay, the workshops, but like when you start curating a feeling that you want people to have, mm-hmm. do y'all consider that? Like, yeah. Is that something that you're mapping on a whiteboard? I want people to like feel this when they leave.
Well, for me personally, it's not necessarily that. It's creating an experience, because you really can't control how somebody feels, but it's like you can control the experience that they get. And 9 times out of 10, if you create an experience that's unique, that's the point of just creating a unique experience, mm-hmm. then it's going to be a memorable moment. I think that's the most important thing. Like just creating moments, like it's like creating memorable moments that people really remember for a long period of time.
Explain a moment from the first event, a moment like that you would, you know, somebody was in the crowd. They're like, whoa, I won't forget this.
It's a variety of different things that happened, but my brother Kenny Burns is here. That was a dope panel. Actually, I think that was a keynote panel for that year where we had him, Jim Jones, 19 Keys Style. It was a very eclectic group that was put together. But after that, Jim Jones did something that was really dope where he walked the vendor market. He actually had a booth in the vendor marketplace. He had a crypto ATM machine. And he walked the vendor marketplace. And that was the first celebrity that actually did that. Steve Harvey did it the next year and went crazy. But that was a dope moment.
That's hard.
Because
are you asking for that, or they just decided to do it?
For which one?
Steve
for
Jim?
Are you asking them like, hey?
Nah, Jim just wanted, did it. Well, Jim had an incentive to do it because he had a vendor. He was a vendor.
Right.
Yeah.
So it was like it was in his best interest to try to create buzz around his booth.
Yeah.
So
SH was just kind of, he wanted to do it.
Yeah, that was just
Steve Harvey.
He wanted to do it.
Okay, I know that's your man's now. So let's not SH us.
I don't want to call him Steve and just be super info, but yeah, SH. He heard about it. He saw the impact that it had, and he was like, "I want to do it. Let's just go."
Yeah.
How it turned out was a scene. Like you want to talk about moments?
Yeah.
That was a moment. I think for the first one, that's crazy. He didn't. I thought he would mention that, but it was. I watched him go out there and interview by himself for the first time.
I think so.
As Earn Your Leisure, I was too sick to get up there. Like I was backstage popping pills, and I'm watching. I'm trying to build up enough energy to go up there. And we sitting there. He's like, "You coming?" I'm like, "I can't. I just physically couldn't get up there."
How'd you feel? Was it a?
But
was
I, it a yeah,
it
thing.
It was cool. It was cool.
Yeah. And, but the impact of that interview, right? It was him. But it was Ryan Leslie.
It was Ryan Leslie and Harper.
And like most people know Ryan Leslie from music.
Yeah.
But nah, he's talking about how he invested in Apple.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's a whole different feel. And I'm sitting back there like, yeah. Part of me is like, damn, can I get up to get it? And it was like, nah, let's just let him go. This is great to watch.
Yeah.
So like it was that moment. It was, you know what I'm saying? So like you, these type of things you remember, I'm just like, yo, it's just crazy. Like, this is us. I'm watching us on stage. Like, this is us, this is our thing.
So this is not natural. Year one, 4,000. Year two, 14,000.
Yeah.
Something happened.
Steve Harvey, definitely, we can't yo, that can't was take. Crazy.
Remember the guy we referenced before?
We can't take full credit for this because it's all about partnerships.
Yeah.
And when we met Steve Harvey, he said he wanted to do business with us. So proposed like, well, this is an opportunity that you know, maybe you can become a partner with us. And he became a partner. So he did a few very pivotal things. A, he came, right?
For sure.
So he's one of the biggest stars in the world. So putting his name on the bill was extremely helpful. He also got us Tyler Perry.
Epic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you don't come outside.
That changes the word, right?
So that changes things. And we went on his show, and I never forget like the impact of that. And I never really listened to his morning show, so I didn't know how impactful his reach was. But it's the number one syndicated morning show in America, and it's over. I think they have like between 6 to 10 million weekly listeners.
Mm.
So he put us on his show. He came on Market Mondays also, which was beneficial, but we went on his show. And after we went on his show, it just never, it took off and it never came down.
Yeah. No, serious. Like it's that level of impact because you got to remember there's an audience that he's talking to, right? Like we might not be listening, but my mom's listening to that every day.
For sure.
And he has a certain region of the country that if he does something, they're supporting it. And so the fact that he was not only our partner, but he was speaking at the event, it just added to it. Plus it just, from our other standpoint, it was like, who else does he have reach to?
Yeah.
And so like, that's how you get a Dan Caffey. And that's how Dave Shands has an epic conversation with Dan Caffey. You see what I'm saying? So it like all these people, like his network is a lot larger than ours.
Yeah.
But now that he's our partner, we have access to his network.
Okay,
you know what
let's
mean?
Back up a little bit.
Yeah,
because I don't know if it was, okay, we have 4,000 people at one, and now Steve is like, hey, I want to be your partner. Like, how did that come about?
Well, when we met him, we did an interview with him, right? Which mm-hmm. that became a classic conversation.
How did you get that?
We were real close with the talent agent at Black Effect, Nicole Spence, shout out to her. And she's Jamaican. So we just had this thing. Like I'd call her once a week. We just talk, just regular things. Every now and then she was like, yo, I have this person that's interested. They're on a press run. They want to do it. And she called me one day in the summer. And she was like, hey, I got this golf tournament I want you to go to, but I can't tell anybody at Black Effect yet. I'm like, who is it? She was like, Steve Harvey. I want you to go there and I want you to do an interview with him, but you can't let anybody know yet. I'm like, whatever. Whatever, Nicole, like whatever. She's like, no, seriously, I'm serious about this. We're getting closer to it. It's in Abu Dhabi. Right? And I'm like,
yo,
all right, whatever. We didn't go to that golf tournament. She calls me later. She's like, listen.
Why not?
Well, it didn't pan out. The schedules didn't pan out because his schedule was kind of crazy. Like he spends like 2 months out the year out there. Mm. And we just, it didn't work. But she was like, look, next year you're definitely going, but I'm going to put you in contact with somebody from his team. His name is Tabidi Stevens.
Mm.
I'm like, all right, cool.
That was a dope interview.
Spoke to Tabidi. He was like, listen, we love y'all. It's the first time I'm ever speaking to him. He's like, We love y'all. I'm from Atlanta. Everybody in Atlanta rocks with y'all. We know what y'all doing. SH is definitely doing the interview. My bad. I was supposed to set it up for y'all to come to Abu Dhabi. It just didn't work. Y'all coming next year for sure. But before that, we got to do this interview. I'm like, all right, bad. This is like November. He's like, I'm like, yo, Shadi, they said we're going to interview Steve Harvey. He's like, yeah.
Earners, what's going on? Listen, EYLU is relaunching, revamping, retooling. That's right. We're creating a new educational experience that's more expansive. Shadi, tell them what we got.
Yes, 2023. We got a lot in store, a lot planned for you guys. So you know that EYLU already includes monthly financial planning calls with me, book club calls with Troy, real estate calls with MG the Mortgage Guy, access to the Home Buying Blueprint, Volume 1 and Volume 2. Part of the revamp will include 27 local chapters from across the United States, live interactive teaching, hands-on, not just pre-recorded videos, plus 15 brand new curriculums.
The biggest just got bigger. Head over to EYLUniversity.com. That's EYLUniversity
EYLU.com. See you there.
When it happens. I'm like,
you didn't believe?
No, I didn't believe.
When it happens, it happens.
I always like to curb my enthusiasm. You know what I'm saying? Okay. Okay.
So I'm like, this is November. I'm like, whatever. Top of the year, I revisit it. They're like, yo, you know, first quarter we're getting this done. January is his birthday month. He travels the whole month of January. We can't do it. Hit me at the top of February. I'm like, I bet. Hit me at the top of February. Yo, we're good? He's like, yeah. February 17th work? I still remember the date. I'm like, that works. Let's do it. He's like, all right, I'll send you all the information you need to know. Y'all need cameras and everything? I'm like, nah, we good. He's like, 17th, make sure y'all come. Mm-hmm. Came 17th.
He snapped on that interview too. And y'all asked all the right questions. Y'all dropped 40. It was nonstop, bro. Like the setups and like the.
I mean, you know, you interview people, so you know it takes two to dance. You gotta have a dancing partner.
Yeah.
And a lot of times people you could be the greatest interviewer in the world, but if the person that you're interviewing isn't into it, mm-hmm. it's not gonna translate well. So it was like, I think we did a great job of asking questions, but he did a tremendous. He was fully engaged.
Yeah.
He wanted to do it. He was, just. Everything about it, from telling jokes to being vulnerable to giving his life, like it's humbling that you say that we did a great job, but it's extremely, we have to give him credit because it was like, you know, it was masterful how he was answering the questions, how he was, you know, going in and out of the topics, how he was ready. He had the bullet points. Even like the first question was like, your five pillars of success. And that took like 15 minutes because like he was literally went off every five pillar. Like it was so many viral moments in that episode. But he was in the right frame of mind and he was willing to share information that he never shared before. Very vulnerable in a lot of different spaces. So he did a great job of relaying the information.
He's gonna take these flowers.
Bro. Yeah, take these flowers. Nah, I'm gonna tell you.
Sean Kemp is not Sean Kemp.
Yeah, nah. Without Gary Payton.
Like without putting
the flowers. Because
he did some good interviews before. Yeah.
It takes two to dance.
It's not like that.
You gotta have a dancing partner. Yeah. So we did our part, but he did his part as well.
When we left that interview, and I'm sure you probably experienced it, sometimes you leave an interview and you're like, we got one. Like we looked at each other right after the interview and we were like, our lives are never gonna be the same.
Really?
Yeah, as soon as we walked out, dragging the equipment, we're like, yo, our life's never gonna be the same.
What were you basing that off of? The information?
We had a conversation prior. So before the interview, we spoke for about maybe an hour and a half. And then we did the interview, which is almost like 2 hours. And then after the interview, we spoke for another 2 hours. And based on the conversations we were having in the room, it was like, yo, this is the one, but our lives are never gonna be the same. Because he's like, yo, we're getting this done. I'm now gonna be your partner in this Invest Festival. Let's see how we can scale this thing. We need to have as many people there as possible. I want to have the most impact as possible. So we knew that our lives weren't going to be the same. But then when we saw it, when the episode came out and him telling us, like after, you know, a couple of weeks, a few months after, he was like, this was the most impactful interview that I've ever had in my career in 35 years.
Yeah, he don't tell everybody.
So here's the interesting part, because what you said is right. Like, when he goes to do an interview, and he had his own talk show, but when he goes to do other people's interviews, it's the same thing. They want to know what he's promoting, how his family's doing, can he tell a joke really quick. You never get to hear anything else about the business, right? He's building a business empire in front of our faces. Nobody's asking the questions. Yeah. We see him on our television every night in syndication on Family. Nobody's asking the questions. And so we were able to do that. Yeah, definitely. He was willing to dance with us and he enjoyed having us there, which made it a lot easier. But it was like both sides. Like we knew it was going to change our lives. And for him, it was like, thank you for this opportunity. But I mean, we were gracious to have it.
All right, give me your perspective from the, our lives will never be the same.
No. So he didn't commit to InvestFest at that time. He just said that he wanted to work with us. We proposed the InvestFest idea to Beatty a little bit after that. You know, just when you go to his house, it's not a regular house. And so it's an estate. Like they actually, they take your ID. You got to sign a NDA.
Really?
Like there's security on the grounds. Like, you know, it's like you're going somewhere. And that's the first.
His home.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Take your
ID. That was the first time that I ever went to a house like that. I personally went to a house where I had to sign an NDA and there was a guard at the gate with a dog and all of that and walkie talkies and all that and tennis courts and all of that type of stuff. So we really, you know, that was an experience within itself just to actually go there. And like you said, the conversation that we had was almost 5 hours when you add up before the interview and the after. And, you know, obviously, you know, he's a kingmaker. Like, he has a lot of influence. So when he took a liking to us, and he was saying, like, he wanted to do stuff with us. Like, he wants to do this, he wants to do that. So I was like, all right, this is going to put us in a different stratosphere. And that's what he did. Like, you know, you look at it from an InvestFest standpoint, but even talking about this year's InvestFest with Robert Smith, like, that comes to him. Like, he's the first person that introduced us to Robert Smith in person. So that was, you know, he made the introduction for Tyler Perry. Like, you know, it took us, we was in Dubai and Abu Dhabi for his golf tournament. You know, Formula One race in Abu Dhabi, different things of that nature. So he's been a good dude. But just, you know, you kind of have a, you, if you meet Jay-Z and, you know, you just have a handshake, it's like, all right, that's cool. But then if you meet Jay and he tells you, I want to do business with you.
It's different.
You know what I'm saying? Like, your life is going to change.
Yeah. How did you pick InvestFest as the thing we partner on? I mean, it's a bunch of, y'all could have created something.
Well, it was coming up. And just felt like that would be a perfect situation.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. So you planned, you had year two InvestFest planned already. Were you promoting and marketing already?
We're putting it together.
You're putting it together. So when y'all putting it together, you weren't thinking 14,000?
Not initially.
I think it might have been 10,000 originally.
You know, one of the things, like, and TB was saying is because, you know, that Stage had a award show that he used to do at State Farm.
Yo, ask him if I can call him SH when I see him too. Just why y'all got this
Mr. or Mr. Harvey. Preferably.
Mr. Harvey.
Dude. And he was like, we were telling him like what we were kind of thinking. He was like, man, y'all should do 20,000. Y'all should do State Farm. I'm like, yeah, we got to grow to that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we got to figure out how we're going to do it. He's like, nah, y'all definitely could do it. We already have connections. We have all the relationships. We used to do our own award show. For entrepreneurs, and it was like a comedy thing. They were telling us the blueprint on how they were doing it. They were like, yo, yeah, y'all could get this done. Y'all definitely could get this done. It was like, all right, well, let's figure out how we can get it done. So it wasn't like a number, but it was like kind of idea, like, all right, well, they got a firm belief and they have relationships. So how do we make this work?
I think something lends to that too. Somebody who just has a bigger view. Like, they're just bigger thinkers, right? Like, I mean, I watch you all and, like, you guys give me the belief that I could do something that I wouldn't even thought of, right? Like, so I always ask, like, yo, what's your downloads? Yeah. And I think one time he was like 2 million. I was like, oh my gosh, 2 million a month. I think I could do it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. And then, like, as you start connecting with people who just have a bigger vision, you're like, oh, no doubt, I can do that. So yeah, now I'm starting to understand this whole 2023, 20,000 number. It just makes sense at this point.
See?
It makes sense.
Yeah, but then I was like, even for that, like, we've had those conversations. It was like, how many downloads? What are the analytics? But then I'm going to show you how you get to that. That's the biggest difference. Because I can just tell you, we're doing 10 million. Wow. How's he doing that?
Yeah.
Not like, yo, here's how you do it. How many episodes you have? You got a back catalog? You know what I mean? Like, we just have these conversations like, oh, if when I look at it like that, that seems very attainable. Yeah. So, like, when they start breaking down, like, how you can get it done and who you can get and who's, what corporate relationships you can have that can be involved, and like, yo, my publicist works with that person and we can get it. It's like, oh yeah, we can reach that number.
And I think, okay, we got Mr. Harvey on. We got Mr. Harvey on, but even still, to get that many people, there's still some work to be done. So I want to know, like, all the work that goes into providing this experience for people.
Well, it's a lot of work. And the key, I think, in any type of, especially when you work with somebody like that, you don't want to abuse it because it's like people are busy. So for us, it's like, all right, it's like riding a bike, right? If you have a kid, like you push somebody on the bike and it's up to you to pedal.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? So he gave us a push, but it's up to us to pedal.
For sure.
We can't, you know, expect him to do all of the legwork. So the legwork part of it is what all of us had to do, from Mike, myself, Troy, Matt, Abdullah, Ashley, our event planner, his wife, Danielle, everybody on our team. Burke making the flyers for us, North 13th and Create making the videos for us.
Well, what is what does it look like for you? You know, you're gearing up for something massive, right?
It's like a fight. Like you got, you know, it's like I, you know, get in fight mode, like a fighter. You know, he trained for 6 weeks before he go into day in camp. So it's like I, you know, locked down. So for us, like you know, press, doing press, that's a big part of it. You know, flying all over, doing different interviews, like having this conversation, like that's part of it. Doing Zoom calls. The good thing is that we have a lot of great relationships.
I was gonna say.
So booking the talent, here's the blueprint of how you do these type of events, right? So A, you have to find a venue, mm-hmm. right? You find a venue and then you put the deposit down, you secure the venue, right? You have to work with an event planner that actually can make this come to fruition as well.
Hold that point real quick. What did y'all spend last year? I've been dying to ask you. What did it cost you to put on?
It probably cost like $1 million, probably.
Like 1.
These guys 3. Are putting $1 million down to make sure you have a great, great experience.
1.3, but who's counting?
Who's counting? Extra 300,000. 1.3 million to provide an experience. This is, and I think it's important that people come to see what excellence looks like. Okay, so find event planner.
But let me give you some game on that too, because I don't want to discourage people. It did cost.
I'm discouraged.
It did cost over $1 million, but that's why it's important to get your payment processing platform. That's important, whoever you pick, because it was like, you know, the payment processing platform that we used at that time, which we're not using them now, but they paid us daily. Mm. So as we get paid, then now we can pay for stuff as well. So you gotta have working capital.
Yeah.
So it's like, if you don't have $1 million in the bank, or if you don't have a loan, then, you know, to be able to receive funds on a daily basis is beneficial, because as the money comes in, now you can write checks and the money's going out at the same time. So that's important to know from a financial aspect if you're thinking about doing these type of events. But from the venue, the event planner, you have to curate the event. You have to get the people. So that, like I said, luckily for us, we even now to this day, we don't go through like talent agencies, and it's not corporate. Like this is personal people that we know. Even Diddy, I could tell that story if you're interested, but that's a personal relationship that we developed, and I hit him personally. I didn't go through, you know, UTA, and shout out to them, but we didn't go through those channels. Like every single person, like we got personal relationships. Yeah. And the people change every year as well. So people that was on last year is not on this year. People that's on the first year, like, so it's different people. So we constantly meet new people and we constantly develop new relationships. So first it's like,
okay. Can I say something really quick? Because that's important. You know the best way to build a relationship?
What's that?
Interview them. Right? Mm. Because now you've given them a platform, their audience has seen it, and it's exposed them to a newer audience.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times, if you look at the people that's on the list, they've had some form of contact with the network. Either it was on our show, or they came on Market Mondays, or Rants and Jams, or they on High Level. At some point, they had a relationship with the network where they would be in an interview. And so now you have a relationship.
Gotcha.
And so now the ask is a lot easier, right? Because, yeah, we had this platform, and we shared you with the world, right? Your greatness. But like, hey, are you interested in talking to the audience again?
Yeah.
It makes it an easier ask.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So you put together the blueprint of what you want. All right, we want a real estate panel. We want a stock panel. We want a keynote speaker. We want a panel on, you know, content creation. And then you just fill it in. Like, who do I
Someone
know?
Someone teaching on podcasting?
For sure. That's a fact.
I'll see you guys this year.
That is a fact. That is a fact.
Dave Shands with the three
C. See you in August.
So you just fill in the pieces. It's like, okay, this person would be good for real estate. This person would be good for content creation. And like I said, fortunately for us, we know a lot of people. So it's just personal phone calls, text messages. And most people, like, people don't really say no to us for the most part. You know, they might have a scheduling conflict or they might not be able to make it. But for the most part, that's the easy part. Hard part is like getting like the big names.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but that wasn't really difficult this year. Fortunately, we was able to get some big names early and lock that in early. Music is the hard part. We can talk about that if you're interested. Mm-hmm. That's the hardest part.
Music is harder than getting names?
Yeah, musicians is the hardest part.
Why?
Because they come with the most baggage. Nah, it's real. It's,
baggage? It's, talk to him, Kitty Birds.
It's real. Nah, it's real. It's real. That's a fact.
They be ridiculous.
They come with the most baggage. 9 times out of 10, you can't go through them directly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of people we could just go through directly. Like, I need you here. All right. Them, you got to talk to their manager and then their manager's manager. And then they, it's and then they're, yeah, like their riders and they don't know their schedule. They might be on tour. They might not be on. Like, just give me an answer. They put you in limbo for weeks at a time. They don't
can't
get back to
right
you.
Now.
So the music, that's a headache.
40 bottles of
that is champagne. A headache, man. Music, I mean, some musicians, like, shout out to Ross. Mm-hmm. That's easy. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? That good dude. So it's not every musician that is bad like that, but a lot of them, man.
Yeah, unless, so like Ross makes it easier because we've sat down with him before.
Right.
We interviewed him at Infahana's event. We did it on Assets Over Liabilities. So there's a he knows who we are, right? Same thing with Tip. We call Tip. It's going to be an easier call because.
Did I see T.I. on there?
Nah.
Wait, just wait on it.
Okay.
Wait on it.
Because when I saw Jeezy's name, I was like, yo, I was thinking of all my favorite songs. And I don't ever think I've seen him in concert. So this is really giving me a chance to like see people in concert. That was my first time actually in VestFest watching Rick Ross perform.
That was a hell of a
And he's right in front of me. I said, what you was going to say
is the first time you get to see me perform. But yeah,
that was a hell of a performance.
That was crazy.
Shout out to Rose.
He went above and beyond.
I mean, all like Kiss, he did a great performance for us at MSG.
Yep, relationships.
Yep. So it is beneficial to book artists that are familiar with us.
Yeah.
That makes it easier. Like we did Jim and at the Apollo. Mm-hmm. That's easy. But yeah, you know, these artists, man, they got a lot. They got a lot, man. But you know what's so crazy? So we booked several different billionaires, right?
Mm-hmm.
And from Dan Cathy to Don Peebles to Tyler Perry to Robert Smith to Diddy as well.
Novogratz.
Mike Novogratz. You know what's so crazy? Especially from the, well, Diddy hasn't sent a rider yet either, but we've never received a rider from a billionaire.
Mm. Yeah. One.
Tyler Perry's rider was.
I want
a haircut and
bananas
and
apple juice,
water. Like
the simplest thing.
Minimal. We never received any demands or crazy requests from billionaires.
Yo, Dan Cathy, I'm talking about owner of Chick-fil-A. He's walking around,
but
by himself
with a name tag.
I walked you into
him. What a name tag on?
Yeah.
But the crazy thing about it is this is I don't know where this rider thing came from.
That's a musician thing. KB, that's a musician thing, right?
No, but I'm just saying it's like some things we just don't question. Because I just thought about that today. I'm like, we book a bunch of people in business, entrepreneurs, athletes, whatever. Why do musicians only have riders?
I think it's really? I think the origin comes from it's from music, but it's what they would like to feel comfortable when they get to a venue, which is all right, I get it. But some of the things is like, yo, 20 bottles of champagne. I'm not sure if that's gonna make you feel comfortable if you're gonna be there for 15 minutes. You know what I'm saying? So like, some of the things it's just like.
But the problem is that they get coddled to, and they're not handling their own business.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like because. Like, let's have a 2-minute conversation about this, because I just thought about this today. Why is a rider needed if nobody else has a rider? Right? What? Like, do you ever think about that? Nobody else has a rider.
Right.
Right? Like, if Don Peebles doesn't have a rider, you come to a venue, you're going to be in a green room, you can expect that there's going to be food there for you.
Yeah.
There's going to be water, there's going to be juice, there's going to be beverage. If you have a special request that you might want, you know, a halal meal, then we can accommodate that, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm just curious to know why musicians are the only people that have riders. And the riders are alcohol, at a tremendous amount of alcohol that you can't consume. So it's like if you have 10 bottles of champagne and
it's a amount of alcohol
it's ridiculous. It's like, who normalized this?
Yeah.
And I realized that it's from the nightclub. Most of them, you know, these come from nightclubs, right? Where they just go to a nightclub and it's like, we got to really start to think about this.
Yeah.
Why are we providing, if we're paying you for a service, then you should just be paid for a service.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be paid for a service and have 15 bottles of tequila at 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
If you want to buy tequila, then you buy tequila.
What's the check I'm giving you?
Organic flavored hummus.
And then you want your money in cash. There's a variety of different things that make this a lot more difficult dealing with musicians, which I understand why. Like concert promoters, they got a hard job because now you got to deal with 100, like say Rolling Loud, they got to deal with 100 artists.
Ooh. 100 riders.
Imagine that.
And if you got 100 of them, now you got to worry about the punctuality of it.
Oh, that's another thing.
Right? Because the thing is like now, yeah, I booked you and you're supposed to be, but now I need you to be here on time.
They never come on time.
And if you're not on time, there's an audience of 12,000 people that are waiting for you to be there. Or 20,000. You know what I'm saying? So it's like...
I'm concerned because it's like, this has become normalized and it's just passed. It's normal. It's normal for rappers. You got to tell a rapper to come 2 hours early because you know he's going to come at least an hour and a half late.
Mm.
But nobody ever questions that. Yeah. Nobody else does that.
I like the fact that you guys are like even right now educating on it and really challenging the system because I think as you're talking about it, I'm like, yo, this is real. And maybe
we had to put extra time on your thing.
Remember we kept running your time back?
We had to put extra time.
You thought you was tripping out? And I'm like, yo, Dave, we just...
Yeah, I was like, yo, I know I saw that clock.
It said five minutes, then it jumped to 15, and then it got down to 7, and we put it back to 12. And you're like...
That was for
we
Fab.
We were dealing with some time issues.
Shout out to Fab, good dude. Right. He's actually a great dude, but it is what it is. He's 3 hours late on 5 o'clock on a Sunday. So we're stalling. Mm-hmm. Literally, when he got there, we put the microphone, gave him the money, they counted it,
Cash.
He walked on stage and performed. Like
cash?
Yeah, cash.
Yeah.
So
cash on delivery.
We literally like
cash on delivery.
We going back and forth with like where y'all at? Where y'all at? Da, 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 da. Like they like oh, 5 minutes away.
Pulling up.
Half an hour later, 5 minutes away. Half an hour later, 5 minutes away. So you was on stage.
They spent 30 minutes. They said we on the grounds. I said, building B. We trying to find it. 25 minutes. I'm like, bro.
No, we was like, put more time on. Put 15 minutes on.
Keep
put
going,
10 minutes on. Put another 15 minutes on. We had to keep adding time.
We gave you the MVP award after that.
Hey man, it's all good. I got it. Hey, listen.
If it wasn't
just put
for
me
that,
on right before any artist, okay? Yo, I'll handle it.
If it wasn't for that, we would have been. I don't know what we would have done.
That time, the DJ would have been playing
because there was no other program. That was the last thing of the day.
Right. Yeah.
So we would have just had to just. 30 minutes of just nothing, an hour of nothing.
Crowd, we were doing swag serving for 30 minutes.
That's exactly.
Yo, you guys are really, like, this is.
But that's why you got to give artists, Fat Joe really, really impressed me. When we interviewed him in Miami, mm-hmm. he impressed me for a few different reasons. So we had him and we had Master P right after. I think you was at the Master P. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we did Fat Joe before we did Master P. The interview, let's say, was at like 2 o'clock, right? So we spaced it where it was like Master P, we'll do Master P at 6 because we know if the interview's at 2, he's not going to come till 3. Because mm-hmm. we just think he's just a rapper.
Yeah.
A, he comes at 1:55.
Mm.
And B, he came by himself. That's another thing. These dudes be coming with 30 people, 25 people.
It was crazy.
And you got to accommodate.
That session is crazy
That was ridiculous.
And it's, everybody's smoking. And it's not even the place to smoke necessarily. Like, you know what I'm saying? There's a time and place for everything.
Yo, it was crazy. Like, this Joe story is crazy because they're calling. I'm calling on the phone like, yo, where's he at? I'm looking for an entourage. They said, nah, he's in that car right there. He's about to get out. I look, it's just him. I'm like, we have to... Yeah,
and that's impressive.
Just him.
And he had like 300,000 worth of jewelry on.
Well, I was going to leave that part out, but...
Nah, he said it.
Yeah, I mean, that's just how he's moving. It was just him. He came to do the interview. He showed love. And that was it. And again, a relationship. So if we ever had to call on Joe, it's like, all right, well, he knows who we are.
I've never seen that before. Whatever. He's the only person I've ever seen a rapper that came... He literally came by himself.
Well, Kiss came on time. Shout out to Kiss.
No, Kiss came by himself.
Yeah.
He came on time, but he didn't come by himself.
Yeah.
He came by himself.
Yeah.
That was impressive.
I like that we're having this conversation because it's educational too. And our culture needs like shaping, right? These types of conversations.
It's correction. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's not meant to bash anybody, but if we don't correct these things, then we start to normalize dysfunction.
Yeah.
And it's like I feel like we have a voice, we have a platform, and we have credibility and strength. Like we are hip hop.
Yeah.
So it's like this is a family conversation.
Yeah.
So it's like we have to correct these things because it leads to getting taken advantage of.
Yeah.
It leads to not knowing doing bad business because how you do one thing is how you do everything.
Yeah.
So if you're not on top of it, if you're late, if you're always high, if you got a million people around you, these are formulas for disaster. So it's like, this is a bigger conversation, but the artist need to understand it. And there's not, there's artists like LaRussell, like there's a new generation of artists that are changing that mold, but it needs to be done more on a wider scale. So it's like, this is a formula that record labels have put in place for artists. And they give you a manager, and they give you a stylist, and they give you a rider. You don't even know, you don't know why you're doing these things. It's just been told to you. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, this is what you're supposed to do. This is what we're going to negotiate for you. This is what you get. You come to the club late. They tell them, like, you come to the club late, fashionably late. You know, come at 2 o'clock.
That's a thing.
Come at 2 o'clock. These are things
club closed at 2:30.
This is not honest.
It's real.
So this is how they're being educated. So like I said, how you do everything, how you do one thing is how you do everything. So if you if you're told don't come to the club until 1:30, then you thinking I'm supposed to be late.
Yeah.
So this is a business event. I'm supposed to be late. You just you automatically think that late is on time because I'm an artist and I can't come on time. But the crazy thing is when we interviewed Robert Smith, who's the richest black person in American history, it was on a Friday at 7 o'clock in the morning and he came at 6:50.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
AM.
So AM. Yeah. So it's like, this is a person that's up $8 billion and he's up with a three piece suit on early.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so it's like, these are the kind of things, never ask for a shot of tequila, drinking coffee.
No.
Like, you know what I'm saying?
That's it. That's the record. That's the rider. Give me some coffee.
So it's like that
happens. Like, you see, like, a lot of these artists who have longevity. Like, we just saw Luda. He's on tour with Janet, right?
Yeah.
There's like this thing going around, like, yo, don't show up late to the show. They're going on time. It's like, yeah, they are.
Yeah.
If you show up at 7:45, he's on the stage at 7:45 in 1 second.
Yeah.
Because he understands the value of his time, but he understands the value of everybody else's time too. You pay for a service. I'm here to entertain. I don't want to have you sitting here for 2 hours waiting for me to come out. And Jet is going to be on clockwork too. And so they understand it, but they have longevity in the space, right? And so, like, if he's setting that trend and nobody's following it and nobody's bringing awareness to it, does it ever change?
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Mm. This is important. And all the people that are like coming, they're going to come enjoy the show, but have no idea that you guys, from this conversation, you're teaching from the stage, but you're also teaching behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Like you're teaching the artist how to operate. And nobody would ever think that before this moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That I'm sure there's certain conversations that you have to have, like, yo, I'm going to need you on time.
You tell them 2 hours early. You do different things. You do different tactics to kind of, you know, ensure that you don't get screwed. Because ultimately, it's not in your best interest for somebody to be late.
Yeah.
So you got to have certain incentives or certain different things of that nature. So you kind of learn that early. Like, when you work with artists, all right, this is how I got to talk to them. This is how I got to handle this person.
2023. It's happening. Diddy is the first name on the flyer.
Sean Combs. Shout out to Diddy.
Sean Combs.
Love.
I got so excited because I know what y'all do in terms of like curating a conversation. And I really honestly believe this interview will be like no other interview. I don't even think any of the other people, for one, he don't do a lot of interviews.
Mm-hmm.
But the people that interviewed him, I think are more focused on pleasing him in the interview to promote. But what I'm excited about is to see all the questions that you guys are gonna ask that we have been wanting to know for years, mm-hmm. for decades.
It's a lot of questions that need to be asked about, you know, his rise to become a billionaire. That's impressive.
Yeah.
His ability to reinvent himself from music to spirits, to fashion, to whatever. His ability to stay relevant for 30 years.
Yeah.
His, you know, there's been questions as far as what artists that said that they were taking advantage of different things of that nature, right? Mm-hmm. These are legitimate questions to be, and I'm sure he has his own point of view. We just haven't heard it.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard Mace, we heard a variety of other artists that have been disgruntled.
Yeah.
But we haven't heard it from his side.
Yeah.
We haven't heard, like, no, this is the education that they missed.
Yeah.
This is what they, you know. Like, this is, his side of the story.
Mm-hmm.
It's important.
Yeah.
Because, you know, no matter how you feel about him, he's an important person in our culture.
Yeah, for sure.
And he's played a tremendous part. And I got to give credit to Deion, though. Deion, it's always the people that you don't know who's the most important people. Mm. So it's like Tabidi, we talked about him with Steve Harvey. Deion is like his right-hand man. And Deion has been somebody that's been watching Earn Your Leisure for years and has been advocating us to him
mm-hmm.
for years. He's been advocating wow. it for years. So, and it was other people inside of the revolt and, you know, his enterprise as well. But Deion was, like, has been in his ear for years.
Sanders.
No, not Deion Sanders.
Deion.
Okay,
Deion.
I'm trying to understand the guys like that.
Shout out to Prime.
I know we know a lot of Deion.
Shout out to Prime. That's all I got too. But nah, his name is Deion Graham.
Okay.
And I'm not sure his exact title, but he's like high level executive at Coleman Enterprises. Right. He's like Diddy's like, you know, go to person, a variety of different things. So he was telling him, he was the first person to probably tell Diddy about us. And he has been telling him about us for a very long period of time. So by the time we actually, you know, it was already a warm vibe. Yeah. Obviously, we, you know, the relationship will revolt, but then from Deion too. So that's important because I wanted to acknowledge him. Because
mm-hmm.
yeah. a lot of times those type of people don't get acknowledged. Nobody yeah. really knows who they are, yeah. but these types of situations just don't happen out of thin air. Yeah. Yeah. There's somebody that's usually always behind the scenes that's advocating for it and that's playing the middleman in mm-hmm. this situation. And that's exactly what he has done and what he is currently doing to this day. So he's a good dude.
He's the guy that we just spoke about, right? Man, I yeah. talked about the CFO of Bad Boy. I've mm-hmm. been doing this for 20 years. Nobody's ever asked me. Like, yeah. these are the people you need to know because he has such an important role. He has so much information, but who's giving him the outlet
right.
to speak on that information? Right. So it's important, like even now, just giving him this moment because he is important to anything. For us being at Revolt, for us getting the Diddy conversation, all of that happens because he plays a role. Tavio played a role. But I want to go back to the other part about Puff is that he wants to do it, right? Like on the message, I'm sure Shia will talk about it, but on the voice note he left, he was like, time is now. Like yeah. the time is now. So all these things that people have been saying, this is the time.
Yeah,
I want to show why it's important. You know, I want to give them the blueprint on how this happened, right? I want to speak about wealth. I want to speak about how we bridge this gap from knowledge and education to wealth. Right, like now is the time to do it. And to know that he felt like we would be the trusted place,
yeah.
I mean, that just adds to it, right?
Yeah.
And we have a track record. Like it wasn't like, hey, this is your first one. Nah, you guys have done some really good work. I've been watching it. I've seen it on my network. I can see what it's doing.
Yeah,
this is the place.
Because y'all definitely made a good point. He don't be at the revolt events. You know what I mean? But he's coming. Well,
that's right. Yeah, I mean, we have a show. That was one of the things we were like, yo, we got to get him on an episode. This yeah. is Assholes Over. Like, we got to have him on the episode. We've been saying this since the first episode.
Yeah.
And it was like, nah, the timing. Like, all right, well, the time's going to come.
Yeah.
We're just going to leave one episode on the deal if we don't get it. So it was like him saying, like, the time is now. I was like, yo, that paraphrases everything. Because it's like, it's the thing we saw. Like, he became a billionaire. And we just had this conversation. But, like, he's first generation.
He didn't really get the announcement though.
Why? You know what I mean? Why?
That's what I was want. Even when y'all said it,
yeah.
I mean, I act like I knew it, but
the billionaire.
Yeah.
I don't think he. You know, he's an interesting person. I don't think that he's gotten the same level of reverence that Jay-Z has gotten.
I agree. Because I was like, he didn't. You know, normally Jay-Z got the billionaire. They calculated everything.
What was Jay's first line? I came into the game wanting more money than Puff.
Yeah.
So Puff's been doing this for that long.
Yeah.
That his first goal when he was like this is like early 2000s, like I want more money than Puff. Then I realized Puff paid me enough, and then it was like, all right, well, we'll get back in this thing together. And it was like, yeah, that's right. But he's been doing it. Yeah. He's been doing it in different spaces.
Why do you think that? Why do you think he hasn't been? Obviously, he's celebrated, but why do you think that the reverence has not been the same?
I think it hasn't been the same because people have mixed feelings about Diddy. It's almost like everyone loves Jay-Z,
mm-hmm.
right? Kanye is the one that's going to tell you he's a billionaire, right? Mm-hmm. Diddy's not necessarily the person that's going to say I'm that, right? So I think I don't know. I don't know. Why do you think?
I don't know.
I think it comes down to that. There's a lot of
question marks.
The disgruntled former artist.
Yeah,
I think that's a part of his legacy.
Yeah,
and I think that that's something that has permeated and has been synonymous. Whether it's right, wrong, fair, whatever. Yeah. I think Baby from Cash Money has a similar type of situation. Because if you look at Baby, I don't think that he gets enough respect.
Yeah.
I don't think he gets enough reference either. We put him number one on our list, and we had a lot of pushback from that. But I'm like, who has a run like him? But I think when you see a lot of artists from Cash Money or people that have worked with Cash Money that said that they didn't get paid and that it was, you know, some shaky business practices, I think the public takes a side.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It takes a side in it. Without even knowing all the information, they take a side. And Jay has done something, because Jay has had disgruntled artists as well.
Yes.
Nah, he had a lot of...
Really?
The whole state property, all of them at one point have, except for Freeway. I never heard Freeway say anything bad about him. But all the state property at one point was disgruntled, including Benny Siegel, who was his guy. Kanye West has taken multiple shots at Jay throughout the course of the years. A mill. I don't want to go down a rabbit hole, but Jay has been able to stay clean.
Yeah, for sure.
Jay, I don't know how he does it, but he has a very unique ability to stay clean, even when you're throwing mud on him.
Yeah.
Maybe because he doesn't speak a lot. It's a nostalgic that you feel for him because he's kind of like a ghost. But no matter what, because people have said negative things about Jay from the Colin Kaepernick. There have been negative propaganda that has been put on Jay, but it hasn't worked the way it's worked for other people. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, Jay has remained clean for almost 25 years, even with the R. Kelly thing. Like, he's never really been in a situation where it was like, let's cancel Jay-Z.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I mean, there's a part of it, that's true, but I think there's a part of it that, again, we kind of normalize greatness.
Mm-hmm.
And so when Puff has done things, we've watched them over the long term, right? We've watched, obviously, the music, but we've watched Sean John in the clothing, and we watched the spirits, and they've been great for so long, right? Yeah. He just got Sean John back. But even that deal is like there's a conversation around it, but he's done the spirits for so long. And while he's been doing it, we've seen the lifestyle. So like the fact that he's reached it, it's like, oh, we already expected him to be there.
Yeah.
Whereas with like Jay, he's doing these investments and it feels sexy because he's doing them. It's like, yo, LVMH, oh man, that's crazy. He just sold it. Oh, he did the Bacardi deal. This is, right? Like they're happening in front of us like real time when there's social media and there's more emphasis on it. Whereas when Puff did the De Leon deal, it was like, well, we didn't really know the works of it, but it sounds good.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Sure,
but the expectation for them was like, we've seen him since he was 21 years old.
Yeah.
He's multi-millionaire then in 1995, 96.
Yeah.
The fact that he's getting to this point, you know, it's like, all right, I felt like the expectation of it was like part of the reason was like the reverence isn't as much. It's like for 10 years ago, did people know who Robert Smith was?
No.
He's been doing it, right? He's been doing these things, right? People still don't even know who Dave Stewart is.
I don't know who Dave Stewart is.
That's right. He's the second wealthiest black man in the country.
Dang.
But we don't even know him. It's not sexy, right? Yeah. And the expectations are not there. But it's like, no, these people need to be recognized for the business, right? Yes, the entertainment is great, but there's business that's going on. Yeah. They didn't make it from music. Music was the thing that catapulted them to open up other opportunities. But it came from spirits, right? It came from fashion. It came from investing. Those are the things that are making them reach these lists.
Man.
When we talk about the Walmart family, like you brought up, I told you the difference, right? This generational and the sustainable. We need to have both.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, they did it off of entertainment and they have spirits. But what happens in the next generation doesn't want to do it in spirits?
Yeah.
What does that look like? So this is it. Like the time is now. It is now. Because now he's 54 years old. What's your legacy look like?
Man. Yo, I know we got to wrap up. Like I got so many questions I'll just ask you. Like, I want to know what y'all talked about at Diddy's house, because that was the meanest thing y'all could have did for Instagram. Like, it was just these sneaks and peeks, and I'm like, yo, what is happening over there? And I was watching, like, yo, this is, something's happening. I don't know what's happening, but something's happening. But yes, man, InvestFest 2023, yeah. This is going to be an epic, epic event. And anytime you can put 20,000 people in the room, and for me, we got great speakers, great artists, but the value, I think, is in the other 20,000.
Absolutely. You know what I mean? The networking. So,
Be prepared. Come prepared. You need to start working on your networking skills right now, because this is going to be a gold mine.
That's a fact.
You never know. And yo, it's millionaires, multimillionaires. I'm talking about just there.
There.
I'm sitting last year, and it was a dude that like owns a nine-figure company behind me, just learned with his notebook. I said,
happenstance.
What's happening here?
Yeah. What's happening?
How many people are like that there though?
Thousands.
Where else can that happen?
That's a fact.
Yeah. So really, if you watch any podcast episode, it's probably a good chance that person is going to be in the building. So if you watch any EY episode, just come prepared, like with you. I don't know if you got a pitch, if you got a business card, if you just come be likable, okay? And some people ain't for the networking. You just want to gather information. That's cool too. But I think you all have done an amazing job of curating a staple in our culture. I'm talking about Black, you go to a Black Enterprise event 10 years ago, that's the staple. Mm. Now it's 700 people. No shout, no shade, but this is different.
Yes.
This is different. So shouts out to you gentlemen, man. Thank you for allowing me to come on and just really, really get the information on what's happening behind this cultural phenomenon, man.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate thank you that, for man. Facilitating this conversation.
Absolutely.
And you know, thank you for all the work that you've done and always saying yes whenever we ask you for something. And you know, much continued success on your journey, your event, your network, and keep inspiring and mm-hmm. keep teaching people, because it's important. The education part, I think, is extremely important, especially when it comes to our space as far as mm-hmm. in the media. I don't think that there's enough education. It's just a lot of trial and error. So it's great to see, you know, you actually filling that void as far as teaching people. That's important.
Everybody on my network is kind of like your grandchildren.
Yeah. Nah, that's important. it's
shout
important.
Out to the squad. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, yeah, thank you again. But that a lot of people, like, will get lost in that. Like, you are on Earned Youth Network, and you had an idea to say, like, I have something that I want to expand on and build on my own.
And y'all supported.
And it was like, yeah, yo, if you want to do that, go ahead. And it wasn't like, yo, we're never doing anything with him again. He left the network. It was like, all right. Let's help him still build, because he's so great at what he does. If he can be part of something, let's make sure that he is. And so, like, we always talk about collaboration over competition, but it's like, nah, if there's a situation where it can help. Like you said, when we ask you to do anything, it's always like, how can I help? And how can I still be of service? And so, like, people can see that. It doesn't have to be a dispute. It doesn't have to be any friction or any awkwardness. It's like, nah, if we can help, we're going to. So thank you for facilitating this.
Never opposed to coming back home, guys.
Got a spot.
Somebody call Mike.
Opposed to coming back home.
Got a spot.
Yeah, yeah.
Appreciate it, man. Yeah, yeah. And yeah, get your tickets at InvestFest.com.
Yeah.
Like you said, 20,000 people this year. We got, of course, Diddy, Robert Smith. But even outside of that, Junior Bridgman, he's almost a billionaire. He's 600 million up. You know, Rich Paul. And then, of course, you know, you, MG the Mortgage Guy, Ian Dunlap, 19 Keys. You know, a variety of different people from Jada, Sheeves, Ari Fletcher.
Oh, wow.
You know, wanted to have a very eclectic group of people. So you got Ari and you got Mike Novogratz, you know? And it's like, and they're both important.
Yeah.
And they're both important. So it's like, you know, let's really incorporate the entire culture, you know, musical performances, Jeezy, Ja Rule. Wanted to have more women in this year as well. So we got B. Simone. We got a podcast stage. I don't think I mentioned that. So we got a podcast stage, first time ever. So we got my boy Jonathan from Finesse's Only Club. Mm-hmm. We got B. Simone. We got
Millionaire Mindset.
Millionaire Mindset. The God Show. So that's a new experience that we're going to have this year as the podcast stage.
Yeah.
And that is exciting. So check us out, man.
Did we say we're not done?
Oh yeah, some more.
Oh, and we're not.
We always add people.
And we're not done. This is the first wave.
First wave. I have some.
Yes. Keep some things in the tuck.
Keep some bullets in the clip.
Hey, hey guys, put in your vacation hours now.
Please.
Okay. Please. Don't play with it. Don't let this be the thing that your job say. Put in your vacation hours now.
Pronto.
Important.
Pronto.
Yeah. Love, man.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Yes, sirski.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
Spring is in full bloom. Are your finances? With the Chime Secured Credit Builder Visa credit card, you can build credit with everyday purchases and regular on-time payments, all with no annual fees or interest. With Chime's secure credit card, you can start improving your credit scores right away. Get started today at chime.com/build. That's chime.com/build. Chime feels like progress. The Chime Credit Builder Visa credit card is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A., members FDIC. Out-of-network ATM withdrawal and OTC advance fees may apply. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details.